On Sunday, December 14th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents alto and soprano saxophonist, flute player, poet, visual artist, composer, band leader, and Renaissance man, Oliver Lake. Join us as we discuss Oliver Lake's career and his upcoming dates at the Winter Jazz Festival. That's Sunday, December 14th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. Our guest for this evening is the Renaissance man, Oliver Lake. He's a flute player, saxophonist, visual artist, composer, all-around great guy. He's going to be at the Winter Jazz Festival in January. We'll talk more about that later. We'll also announce it during the bandstand with our associate producer, Hank Williams. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar in My Bowl, coming up now. We're going to start off the program with Oliver Lake's Organ Quartet, From What I Heard, and 6 and 3. Stay tuned.
What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. Thank you.
My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Oliver Lake.
Good evening, Oliver Lake. Thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Oh, my pleasure.
And let's see, there are many things that I want to talk to you about, but we'll start with your birthplace was in
Marianna, Arkansas.
And you left at around 2-ish.
That's correct. I moved to St. Louis and was raised in St. Louis, Missouri.
So I guess you have more of your roots in St. Louis.
That's correct. Yeah. Very few family in Arkansas at this time, but the ones that were there, a lot of them have moved to Chicago or St. Louis or to California.
So you don't really have an understanding of what things were going on in Arkansas, huh?
Not really. I haven't been there that often. I've gone a couple of times in my life. When I was young, very young, I used to go back and visit my granddad when he was alive, spend the summers with him, but he had moved to Tennessee, so I spent a couple of summers in Tennessee when I was young, not even a teenager.
St. Louis, which you have a lot of connection with.
Oh, yeah.
What was it like growing up musically for you?
Oh, I thought it was very exciting for me because I actually got introduced to jazz through a marching group, a competition of drum and bugle corps named the American Woodmen. And the American Woodmen was actually a black-owned insurance company, and they sponsored this marching band that traveled across the United States in different competitions. And there were young players in there who were interested in jazz. And I was actually playing the cymbals and I'm playing bass drum and playing cymbals in that marching group.
Oh, so you're really a percussionist.
That's where I started.
What led you to the reeds?
Well, there were some older musicians in that group that were playing saxophones and trumpets and playing jazz. And they piqued my interest for wanting to play the saxophone. There was a saxophonist in that group named Fred. I'm not remembering Fred's last name right now, but he was very instrumental in getting me excited about even thinking about playing the saxophone. He played tenor sax.
Could it be Freddie Washington by any chance?
Oh, that's another Freddie.
Okay.
Who was also a mentor of mine who I eventually ended up studying with and then eventually ended up recording him on my label Passing Through, his first recording. And he's still in St. Louis and he's a dynamic tenor saxophone player. But there were two Freds who were a part of getting me into playing the saxophone.
Thank you. Now, I want to talk about Passing Through a little later, but I understand that you actively picked up playing saxophone at 18?
Yeah, I was 17 or 18. That's right. I was in high school when I joined the marching band. I think it was close to my last year when I started. And I thought I was starting pretty late because most of the musicians that I was hanging out with had started at 9, 10, 11 years old. Mm. And Lester Bowie, who was a trumpet player,
yes,
and a very great friend of mine, at that particular time, he told me, it doesn't make any difference when you started. In 10 years, nobody will know when you started if you get in and practice your butt off. And I said, oh, you're right. So don't even think about being upset about starting so-called late.
And Lester Bowie was, see, I always make this mistake. He was with Art Ensemble of Chicago?
Right. Well, you know, he lived in St. Louis, and the Black Artist Group started in St. Louis. And when the Art Ensemble made their trip to Europe and lived in Paris, and they came back and they stayed in the building that the Black Artist Group had, that building that we had there, and then we did exchange concerts with the ACM and the Black Artist Group and back and forth to Chicago and St. Louis between the two groups. So he was intertwined in both groups, but he was formerly a part of the Art Ensemble of Chicago and the ACM.
Now, you went to Lincoln University in 1968. You got your bachelor's, actually, in 1968 from Lincoln University.
That's correct.
Now, being at Lincoln University, I know some folks who attended Lincoln University, and it was a pretty, I don't know, radical environment to be.
Well, I hadn't thought about it in that way.
I guess it
was radical in the sense that in the music department, jazz was outlawed. So it was radical from that point of view.
Oh, my goodness. Now, that part I actually
didn't know. Is that what you were referring to?
No, actually, I was talking about politically aware and conscious student body. But tell me about jazz being outlawed at Lincoln University.
Yeah, the music department, the emphasis was on classical music and gospel.
European classical.
Correct. Yeah. And the head of that department was a vocal instructor, and he felt that jazz was lowbrow and should not be taught at the school. So those of us who wanted to play jazz, we had to sneak and play jazz. If they heard us playing any jazz in the practice rooms, the teachers would come in and make us stop.
Oh, my goodness.
So
when they finally, I guess, welcomed jazz, do you know when that was?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It did happen after I had left the school, though, I guess with maybe the next head of the music department, it probably changed.
Now, I understand that you started the Black Artist Group, the Musicians Collective, with Julius Hemphill and Charles Bobo Shaw?
That's correct.
Could you tell me about Charles Bobo Shaw? I'm not familiar with him.
He is a drummer, very creative drummer, and he was one of the founding members of the Black Artist Group with several other musicians in St. Louis and poets and writers who started that group, because the group consisted of not only of musicians, but actors, dancers, visual artists, and so forth. And he was one of the musicians who started, was a co-founder of the group. And he lives in St. Louis now, and he's still playing drums.
And most persons are familiar with Julius Hemphill.
Oh, yeah. He's got that classic recording, Dogon.
Thank you. Dogon. D-O-G-O-N.
That's right.
An amazing.
Yeah, it was actually Julius and myself and a writer named Robert Elliott who were the main co-founders of the Black Artist Group at that particular time. And that happened around 1967, 68 when we started. We were very fortunate because we were able to get funded in the first year that we started the organization, and had a building and had students, and we were presenting ourselves and presenting plays, concerts, dance concerts, had visual artists who lived on the premises in the building. So it was quite a very flourishing group for the short period of time that it existed.
Yeah, I suspect that from what you're saying, it sounds like the Black Artist Group in St. Louis was the way that people sort of expressed Black Arts Movement in St. Louis.
That's correct. I mean, there were other groups there, too. Catherine Dunham was in East St. Louis, and she had a very vibrant group at that time. And we were actually two of the groups that were funded at that particular time by the Danforth Foundation, who was based in St. Louis. And she had her group in East St. Louis, and we had our group in St. Louis. And there's been a book that was written about the history of the Black Artist Group. It was written about 5-6 years ago by a writer named Benjamin Looker. And the book is called Point From Which Creation Begins, the Black Artist Group in St. Louis. And if any of your listeners want to check it out, they can Google it and order it through Amazon. He actually interviewed a lot of the St. Louis founding members and people who were members of the Black Artist Group, and he did a very interesting and thorough historical account of the Black Artist Group.
Oh, wonderful. That's good to know. Definitely add that in conjunction with all the other books that are available.
The
umbrella of the Black Arts Movement.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start writing?
Well, you know, I always look at the Black Artist Group as being my school. And one weekend, I might be accompanying a poet while he read his poems. Jule Rutland was that poet who was one of the major poets in the Black Artist Group. He passed away a couple of years ago. And then another weekend, I might be writing music for a big band, or writing music for a play, or writing music for dance and performing. And then when I moved to New York in 1974, I was living on the Lower East Side, and I met Intsaki Shange and some other writers, and I was accompanying her. And then I started to be excited enough about, you know, I think she had inspired me, and from the work that I did in the Black Artist Group with poets. And then when I started accompanying poets in New York when I moved here, and then I got the bug to want to expose myself. And by that I mean writing. When you start writing, you expose yourself.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. Now, you mentioned working with Entesaki Shange. I have to say, one of my favorite productions of For Colored Girls, Who Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough, is the PBS version, the production that aired on PBS, and you were playing in the production.
No, I haven't. My music was used in the Broadway version, the recorded music. I didn't play in that Broadway version, but my name was in the play, and Saki and I were great friends and still are. I haven't been in touch with her lately, though, but yeah, she was a big inspiration for me wanting to write and perform my poetry.
Yeah, there's one piece that Carol Maillard, who's a member of Sweet Honey, a founding member of Sweet Honey and the Rock, reads about her dancing in a Latin club, and you sort of wind up playing behind her.
When I discovered Archie Shepp and subtle blues, oh, don't you know I wore out the magic of juju, heroically resisting being possessed. Oh, the sounds, and sneaking in underage to slugs to stare at a real artiste, and every word out of Imamu's mouth was gospel. And if Jesus couldn't blow no horn like Shep, wasn't no need for colored folks to bear no cross at all. And poems is my thank you for music. And I love you more than poem, more than Aureliano Buendia loved Macondo, more than Hector Lavoe loves himself, more than the lady loved gardenias, more than Celia La Scuba or Graciela loves El Son, more than the flamingos. Shoo-doo, shoo-be-doo, love being pretty. Oye, negro, te amo más que. Te amo más que when you play your flute. Te amo más que. Te amo más que.
I guess you didn't film it together, but you're in the production. If anyone goes to YouTube, actually, you can see Oliver Lake playing in For Color Girls.
Well, I'm going to look at it because I haven't seen that in so many years. I'm going to check it out myself. Thank you.
Yeah. Oz Scott?
That's right.
I had seen him at the Schomburg and had asked him how you wound up, and I thought it was his idea for you to be in the production, but how did you wind up being part of that production?
No, Zaki insisted that when she conceived the piece and when it was going to Broadway, she wanted only my music in the play, and Oz Scott wanted it to be a mixture of different music, especially music of females, and so then my music ended up in there along with other music that was written by a female composer. I don't remember her name, but there were several, and so it was just the insistence of Zaki that I was a part of it.
I'm going to go back to the Black Artist Group. How did it wind up dissolving?
Well, to make a long story short, there was a conflict between the musicians and the theater department, and that conflict eventually led to the dissolving of the group. And it was unfortunate because at the end of the third year, I took a group from the Black Artists. As the group dissolved, I moved to Paris with four other musicians from the Black Artists Group, Bakita Carroll, mm-hmm. Joseph Bowie, Charles Bobo Shaw, Floyd LaFleur, and myself. And then I called the band Oliver Lake Bag because the group in St. Louis had just disbanded. And when I look at groups like the ACM, who, even though a lot of them moved to New York from Chicago, they left a younger group of musicians in Chicago to keep the organization going. And that was a mistake I felt that we made. We could have left, should have left the younger group of musicians to continue that fantastic group that we had started in the Black Heart in St. Louis. And we didn't. Regret that we didn't do that.
Is there a way that you see that possibly happening today? I know people have probably asked you that before, the concept of a collective.
Well, you know, I don't think collectives have actually stopped, because there have been several, well, just speaking of St. Louis, there have been several musicians and creative people in St. Louis who've tried to restart the Musicians Collective and do concerts and still use the name of the Black Artist Group. And some of that has been successful and some of it hasn't been, but I think throughout the country, there are still some collectives, and I don't think that it's a dead issue in terms of creative musician collectives or creative acting collectives, just collectives in general, which are creative, I think are continuing to happen.
Do you see it happening with a younger group of folks?
Well, I'm just trying to think historically. I know Vernon Reed had started a group in New York, Black Rock Coalition.
Right, right.
And I'm going back. We started a group called the Brooklyn Initiative, but that was years ago. That was also in the 80s, in the late 80s. That's not still existing. And Steve Coleman had started his group. I'm not remembering the name of the collective musicians, but I'm not aware of what's going on right now. In 2014, I don't know which collectives are active.
Do you think that the times sort of command the existence of collectives?
Well, I think it's always a time to have a collective, because one of the points I think of a collective is as a group you can make a stronger statement than you can individually. And also it's a way for you to determine your destiny and make things happen for yourself. And the collective is a way of doing that. And I think that will always be the case historically, that people have accomplished the most when they are a part of a group than individually.
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl's the name of this program. Our guest for this evening is Oliver Lake, Renaissance man. And what we're listening to right now is the late Makonda Ken McIntyre, Smile from a New Beginning, which is on the Passing Through Records label, as mentioned. Before that, we heard Cotton 4 from the Oliver Lake Quintet. That's from Prophet, which is a 1981 Black Saint release. Before that, we heard Zaki from the Oliver Lake Quartet, Edging. It's a 1994 Black Saints Records release. Before that, we heard Hassan, Oliver Lake from Holding Together, a 1976 Black Saint Records release. Before that, we heard Sing Song from Frederick Freddie Washington Jr. The name of the release is Lilac, Volume 1. It's a 1999 Passing Through Records release. And we open the show, as mentioned, with the Oliver Lake Organ Quartet, 6 and 3. What I Heard is the name of the release, and that's a 2014 Passing Through Records release. Stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl and Oliver Lake, and more mention of the Winter Jazz Festival, which is happening next month, January, from the 8th through the 10th, but the marathon music days are the 9th and 10th. Stay tuned for the Bandstand with our associate producer, Hank Williams, on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, on the web.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for December 14th. In this segment of the show, we bring you aerial listings of Suge and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. This week's guest is saxophonist Oliver Lake. You can see him live with Trio 3 and his organ quartet at the 2015 Winter Jazz Fest on January 9th and 10th. Details are at winterjazzfest.com, and you can see our own preview and festival coverage on the Suge and My Bowl blog. And we have the usual lineup of live music this week. Pianist Randy Weston will be master of ceremonies for a tribute to saxophonist Renee McLean at the Schomburg Center on December 16th. Go to sistersplace.org for info and the required tickets. That's sistersplace.org. Also on the 16th, drummer and percussionist Bobby Sanabria will be at Baruch College's Performing Arts Center with Gene Marlowe's Heritage Ensemble. Tickets and info are at the Baruch website, which is baruch.cuny.edu, and look for events. Again, that's baruch.cuny.edu, and then events. Drummer Jeff Tane Watts leads a quartet at the Village Vanguard from December 16th to 21st. See villagevanguard.com for details. Pianist Vijay Iyer presents Music for Transformation at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on December 18th to 20th. See BAM.org for details. That's BAM.org. Saxophonist Gary Bartz leads a quartet at Smoke from the 19th to 22nd as part of their John Coltrane Festival. Info is at smokejazz.com. Vocalist Carol Maillard and the legendary Sweet Honey and the Rock return to the area for their annual holiday concerts. You can catch them at NJ PAC in Newark on the 20th. Go to njpac.org for details on that show. Pianist Mark Carey leads his focus trio at Minton's in Harlem on the 21st. Details are at mintonsharlem.com. That's Minton's with an S, harlem.com. Pianist Harold Mayburn co-leads a quartet from the 23rd to January 1st at Smoke, and that's part of their Coltrane Festival, too. See smokejazz.com for info. Vocalist Catherine Russell is at Jazz Standard on the 23rd with Andy Farber's After Midnight Orchestra. Go to jazzstandard.com for details on that show. Harpist Brandy Younger takes the stage at Minton's on the 28th. Details are at mintonsharlem.com. Looking much further ahead, vocalist Catherine Russell and master drummer Michael Carvin will both be appearing at Mohonk Mountain House's Jazz on the Mountain from January 16th to 19th, but you need to reserve now since it's selling out. Go to wbgo.org for details and click on the events link for that. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, you can see the listings at the Suge and My Bowl blog. Go to sugeandmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. Tonight's playlist and audio from this and previous shows are on the site as well. If you missed it and want to contribute, click on the Support WBAI link at sugeandmybowl.org to help support the radio station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the WBAI airwaves next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, December 28th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Well, I noticed from the groups that came out of the Black Arts Movement and that it created a sense of self-determination and sort of do-for-self kind of thing. And in one of those efforts of doing for self, you organized passing through records.
Again, that takes me right back to the Black Artist Group, and that's exactly what you just said, the doing for self and being in control of the music, because we never really know where this music is going to end up, and I wanted to make sure that I owned my own music and was able to record my projects and other musicians as well. And it's a part of self-determination, having your own group. I mean, there's so many musicians who have their own labels now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm going to give a selfless plug. I just recorded a fabulous young trumpet player, Josh Evans. He just recorded his quintet. It'll probably come out in the spring of next year.
Oh, beautiful. Excellent. Well, for one thing, I'm glad to see that Passing Through Records is still in existence.
Oh, yeah.
And you're still recording, folks, because I noticed that you recorded, yay, Josh Evans group, but you recorded Makata Ken McIntyre.
Right. Two CDs, two albums came out of him. One was a solo and one with a quintet.
Yeah. And he played everything.
Oh, yeah.
On the solo. Could you tell me about that recording session?
Well, I wasn't physically there.
Okay.
He actually produced it himself.
Okay.
And brought me the finished product to me, so I didn't participate in the session.
Oh, okay.
But I did record John Hicks' trio, and John Hicks' trio was also a part of the Freddie Washington recording that I mentioned, the saxophonist from St. Louis.
Right.
And John and I actually went to high school together, so I knew him from many years in St. Louis.
Oh, wow. How did you wind up working with Amiri Baraka?
Well, when I moved to New York, I met Amiri, and we did not work extensively, but we did a couple of concerts together, and I accompanied him in several of his poetry readings. But that was, wow, that was, when I moved here in 74, we must have hooked up around, I'm thinking like 76 or something, that we met, and then I started doing a few projects with him.
tell me about the world famous World Saxophone Quartet.
Yeah, that too, the way that came together was, it was kind of accidental in a way, because Ed Kid Jordan, a saxophonist from New Orleans, came up to New York, and he was checking out all four of our individual groups, and he wanted to invite all four of our groups to New Orleans to do a concert. And he said, I can't bring all of your groups, but I want to bring all four of you and put you with a New Orleans rhythm section. The four, Hammett Blewett, David Murray, Julius Hemphill, and myself. And the response from that first concert was so crazy. It actually frightened us because the response was so wild. First of all, the concert was sold out. And as soon as we started playing, I mean, there were kids there, there were older people, there were all age ranges there. Wow. And the kids just started running around the room, and people started jumping up and dancing. And wow. I mean, and we were sitting on stage like, what's going on here? And then when we finished the concert, we went to the dressing room and said, we got to keep this group together. We've never gotten that kind of audience response from each one of our individual bands. But then when the four of us were on stage doing what we were doing with that rhythm section, then we got back to New York and had a meeting trying to decide who's going to play drums, who's going to play bass. And I can't remember which one of us said, let's not have drums, bass, or piano. Let's just do it with the four saxophones.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of the World Saxophone Quartet.
Jazz Alive continues with the grand collaboration of Oom Boom and the World Saxophone Quartet. Prior to the concert, both groups spent several days in rehearsal, learning each other's compositions and working towards complete unity. Max Roach, who brought both ensembles together for this event, spoke with Tim Owens about the collaboration.
What made you want to include the World Saxophone Quartet with Oom Boom?
Well, we had been seeing each other. The World Saxophone Quartet is a group of young, very talented, gifted, and creative musicians whom I had been seeing more often in Europe on the European festivals. And we began to talk about doing something together then. They said, you know, we'd like to do something with you. And I said, I'd like to do something with you, of course. And then it occurred to me that it would be wonderful if we could all get together and do something with Oom Boom, the percussion ensemble, and the World Saxophone Quartet. And the idea first cropped up when the World Saxophone Quartet and myself began to talk about it, maybe a year and a half or two ago. And finally, you know, this occasion gave us an opportunity to deal with it.
Well, you've rehearsed a week for this program, and with both groups rehearsing with one another, what kind of problems did you run into with both groups, and how did you overcome them?
Well, first we primed ourselves. Those of us in Oom Boom listened to the work of the World Saxophone Quartet by record. And, of course, we gave them our records, and they gave us theirs, and we kind of studied each other from that vantage first. And then when we got together, we were familiar, at least musically, with everyone. And we just went into the studio and just kind of patiently dealt with the things, the problems that we thought the things that we thought we may have problems with. We dealt with those things.
Musically, you're talking
musically,
about?
The problems, you know, of saying, how do we mesh percussion with the World Saxophone Quartet or with all these wonderful reed players and vice versa, is what it was. Mm-hmm.
And how do the two groups seem to mesh for you?
I knew it would work because I knew the individuals in both groups. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you have talented and dedicated people, you know, you can almost make anything work. You can take a piccolo and a timpani and make something happen with it if you have, talented people who are dedicated and who are willing to work at it. You can take these two instruments, which seem to be at opposite ends of the tonal spectrum, and really get something out of it that is musically meaningful. Mm-hmm.
Max Roach, the World Saxophone Quartet, Boom in the Grand Collaboration.
The World Saxophone Quartet with guest artists.
But when we started, the first name we had was the New York Saxophone Quartet. But then there was another group in town with the same name. So then we called ourselves the Real New York Saxophone Quartet.
Uh-oh.
And you can believe we got a letter from their lawyer. So then that's when we came up and said, we'll let them have New York. And we became the World Saxophone Quartet.
Oh, nice. Very nice. And you still play today?
Yeah, we haven't played in a couple of years now. We've been on a break, but the band is, technically is still together, but we haven't played for a while.
Thank you. trio three, Andrew Cyril, Reggie Workman, and yourself. How did that happen?
Well, this was about 25, 26 years ago. Each one of us was calling each other to play in each person's group. Mm-hmm. Reggie was calling me to play in his band and calling Andrew. I was calling Andrew to play in my band, and I called Reggie. And then the same thing with Andrew calling each one of us. And then we said, wait a minute, we keep calling each other to play with each other's bands. Why don't we just form a group with the three of us?
Mm.
And that's how we started. And we've been doing guest projects. Like, we'll be playing at the Winterfest on January 9th. Vijay Iyer is going to be our special guest.
And you recorded with him on Wiring.
That's right, on Intact Records.
Yeah, excellent. And before that, you had recorded with Jerry Allen.
And Jason Moran.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did Jerry Allen first, Jason Moran second, and DJ Iyer was the last recording we did on Intact Records. And Intact, we've done most of our recording on Intact.
Well, one of them was on Palmetto. That was Open Ideas.
Right.
Tell me how you decide the musical configurations that you put together. How do you decide, okay, this is where I'm going to go? Like, you have the organ quartet, you have a steel quartet, you have a big band, there's, you know, Trio Three and World Saxophone Quartet.
I've been fortunate. Everything I like, I've been able to do. So, but I don't have the steel band anymore. I'm concentrating on my organ quartet, which had a recording out on Passing Through this year, and on Trio 3 and my big band. Those are the three projects that I'm really concentrating on mostly at this particular time. Over the years, I've had different projects, and I like changing the context for my alto sax.
The organ quartet, the most recent is What I Heard, and
right.
My partner Hank Williams and I, we were able to catch you during the residency that you had at the Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, we caught the second set with Billy Harper.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, I was just blown away by the Jared Gold.
Fabulous.
Where'd you find him?
Well, it was kind of serendipitous the way we came together, because I actually called a different organ player when I decided to start the organ, my organ group. Mm-hmm. And the organ player was booked, and he said he gave me Jared's name. And then that was it. And once I called him and I heard what he was doing, I was like, this kid is amazing playing the organ. And he's been playing with me now 6-7 years.
Oh, wow. Do you have any dates for the organ quartet coming up?
Oh, yeah. We're going to be playing in the Winterfest also.
Oh!
So on the 9th, I'm playing with Trio 3 and DJ Iyer. On the 10th, at the Bitter End, I'm playing with the organ quartet at 6:15.
Excellent.
I think we play at 10 o'clock on the 9th with Trio 3 at Minetta Lane mm-hmm. Theater. And then at the Bitter End at 6:15 on the 10th with my organ quartet.
Okay. Oh, it's wonderful. Yay. It's like great mm-hmm. opportunities to catch the great ensembles. Your debut release, Into the Point from Which Creation Begins,
mm-hmm.
how did that, it's been described as free, jazz, African centered. How did you come about recording that?
Well,
did the music...
I was still in St. Louis when that recording was done, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be a St. Louis label that was going to put that first recording out of the group that I was calling Oliver Lake Bag at that particular time. And the percussion was there because there was an African percussion group in the Black Artist group, and so I included some hand drummers and percussionists in that recording. But then something happened to that particular label in St. Louis, and then I moved to New York and I had that recording with me, and it ended up coming out as my first release. That was projected to be my first release from a St. Louis label, but that label went defunct, and then I got the tapes and did it on the label that came out in New York. Thank you.
So there was a box set that came out, the complete remastered recordings on Black Saint and Soul Note Records.
Right.
Oliver Lake. They're like seven CDs. It's a seven CD set, and it's got all kinds of stuff that you've recorded in here.
Right.
Did you have anything to do with the putting together of this, the organizing of it?
No, you know, this is one of the things business-wise that happens to musicians. The recordings were owned by Black Saint, and Black Saint sold that to the label that put together this box set. And I know several musicians who have lawyers going after this record company to try to get paid at least for their publishing rights. But most of the music was outright owned by Black Saint, and they sold it.
Oh.
But the publishing was owned by the musicians, and there should be some publishing fees. So I'm going to be in the process of getting a lawyer to see about getting my publishing money, but I had nothing to do with that.
Oh, wow.
None of the musicians did, actually.
That's criminal.
From my knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Well, see, that's why that goes back to Pat having passing through. I own that, so I know what that's about. But when you record for someone else, they sell it and it goes somewhere else. You're kind of cut out of the picture.
Right. Well, congratulations for passing through records. Really.
That's right.
Do you have like a studio or you rent space or it's?
No, I usually use a studio in Brooklyn that I like a lot. Peter Carl's studio.
Okay.
I don't have a recording studio. No,
okay.
I rent studios and go with the engineer that I like to do, who really has an excellent way of capturing my sound and things that I like. And that right now that happens to be Peter Carl.
Okay. Does he work with many people or he just works with you?
No, he works with a lot of people.
Oh, okay.
But most of my recordings in the last 10 years have come out of that studio. Both big band recordings and two of the organ quartets have come out of there. And Josh Evans' quintet that we did was there.
You mentioned the organ quartet and artwork on Plan. That is your artwork, the sticks?
That's right.
Tell me about that. Where does that come from for you?
Well, everything goes back to the Black Orchestra.
Okay.
For me, like I said, I think that was my school.
Right.
And but when I was in high school, I was also drawing Art Blakey and Coltrane and drawing pictures of musicians. And I never had any formal training in art.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always attracted to art. And about 10 years ago, I think up until 10 years ago, I was doing maybe one painting a year.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't putting that much time on it. And I said that I wish I had more time to paint. And I said that once to Douglas Ewart. Douglas Ewart is in the AACM,
yeah,
and he lives in Minneapolis. And he plays the alto saxophone, and I don't know if you've heard of him.
Oh,
now,
yes. But, yes, I have.
Oh, okay. So you know Douglas.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So, and he's a visual artist.
Oh, okay.
And so I mentioned that to him. I said, yeah, I wish I had time to paint because I was traveling and writing music and didn't have time to paint more than one painting per year. And he looked at me and said, do you have 15 minutes? And I said, yeah, I got 15 minutes. He said, well, you got time to paint.
Mm.
It was like he was kind of giving me a little boost, saying, stop talking about what you don't have time to do. If you got 15 minutes, you got time to do it.
Right.
And I literally started painting about 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes a day.
Oh, great.
And that was about 10 or 12 years ago. And I looked around, and in a couple of years, I had enough paintings for a show, and someone asked me to do a show. And I've just been doing it ever since then. On a more regular basis, and all of the artwork on the Intact records for Trio 3 is my artwork. The
okay.
ones with Jerry Allen, the one with Jason Moran, the one with DJ Iyer,
yes.
and a couple more. And several of the ones on my label, Passing Through, is my artwork. The one on the very latest cover of the What I Heard, Organ Quartet, that's my artwork as well.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's like you could get the CDs just for the artwork.
Oh, wow.
I mean, of course, you can, you know, you get the extra added bonus of the music being great, too. But it's like the artwork is beautiful. It really is.
Oh, thank
Love
you.
Love the presentation. Are any of these pieces available? I mean, do you make them available at your website?
I may not have those exact pieces on my website, but my art is available for sale for sure.
Okay.
And I'm in the process of updating my website, but the pieces, there is a gallery on my website now, and it gives some of the older pieces. I have to get it updated with some of my newer pieces, but my website is OliverLake.net.
Okay. That's OliverLake.net.
And if you go there and you'll see one of the pages says gallery. And you click that, and then the paintings come up.
You know, I really like your sticks because they remind me, even though they're painted, they remind me of the indigenous
mm-hmm.
sticks that are used with thread.
Right.
Do you use mixed media? You don't just paint them, right?
I use everything on there. I paint,
mm-hmm.
glue things on there,
yeah.
ropes, you know, safety pins, anything.
Yeah, they're really beautiful.
Thank you.
And the sticks are available as well?
That's right.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a gallery in Newark called Al Jaira.
Mm-hmm.
And on May 17th of next year, my sticks are going to be there on display. My big band is going to play there. So that's a Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And then the sticks are going to be there for display as well.
Speaking of creativity, your partner, Marion, she makes some bad clothing.
She designed
some great stuff.
Have you been to her store?
No, I have not. What's the name of her store again?
Dem Two Hands, D-E-M-T-W-O Hands.
And there's actually a website, Dem Two
Hands. There's a website,
well.
And you can look through her stuff there, yeah.
Yeah, she's got some really nice stuff for women who are healthy and women who are women.
Oh, yeah. Well, how did you get hip to it? Were you online or?
Well, I was talking to her about it when at the Stone, and then I just went to the website, and there's some really beautiful things there.
When you get a chance, you should come out and hang out.
Definitely, definitely. And you've played in mm-hmm. the store as well.
Yeah, I used to play there on every of her anniversary, but I haven't done it in a while now. Mm-hmm. She's had the store now for about 24 years.
Wow. I think your daughter is a fashion designer as well?
That's correct. Yeah. Maya Lake. She has a company
mm-hmm.
called Boxing Kitten.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And she has a website as well, Boxing Kitten.
Yeah, that's right. And one of my sons is a DJ, and he lives in L.A., and another one of my sons is Gene Lake, who plays drums.
All right.
And is very active on the scene.
So creativity does not limit itself with just you and Marion.
No, the apple doesn't fall that far from the tree. That's
yeah.
What they're saying, right?
Oh, wonderful. Here's a quickie. You did some work with a Tribe Called Quest.
Indirectly, I did do some work with Tribe Called.
Did they sample something of yours? Is that it?
No, it was. I work with Bjork, the
singer.
Pop singer.
Yeah.
And they asked her to do a remix.
Oh.
So then she called me and asked me to help her be a part of that remix of Tribe Called Quest. So I went to England. And we went into Spain into a studio, and she had the tapes there. I never met Tribe Called Quest, but we had the tapes in the studio, and then I played over some of the stuff that Bjork put together studio as the remix. And they had a different artist remix it for America, and they had a different remix for England.
Wow.
For Europe. And Bjork's remix was played in Europe, and I can't remember which artist did the remix for them of the same tune in America, and it was released in America.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. So I was indirectly, I was a part of the Tribe Called Quest remix, but I never actually met them.
I did
the recording with Bjork's first solo CD that she did.
Oh, wow. That's a great CD, too. You were a teacher. You taught grade school before you...
Yeah, in St. Louis. When I finished school in 1968, I was hired at St. Louis Public Schools in the elementary schools, and I taught there for 3 years before moving to Paris.
And you're not teaching now because... Why?
Well, I teach... I don't have a position at a school,
right,
per se, but I do workshops and...
Right.
Artists in residence and things like that, but I don't have a contract with the school. No, I have not.
And you wouldn't want to do that?
Not at this point. No.
Okay.
I thought when I got around, I said I'll go look for a permanent teaching gig when I was around 55 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen, and I didn't do it, so I'm just going with the flow.
Got
writing
it.
And playing music and doing the projects that I've been doing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I have private students, and occasionally I get residences at schools, but I don't have a permanent gig.
Oh, okay.
Like a lot of my cohorts, like Reggie Workman is the head of the new school department there,
right,
the jazz department, and Andrew works there as well.
Right.
A lot of musicians are connected with institutions, but I have not been, not formally.
Mm-hmm. You know, Michelle Rosewoman was telling me about a time that she brought, I think it was you and Billy Hart and some other musicians, and the students, their reaction was sort of, one student in particular was like, why did he do that? Why did he do this? It's like, why did he play that way? It's like, that's a child could play like that.
Well, you know, that was here, there's a group called Jazz House Kids.
Yes, Jazz House Kids. Yeah, Christian.
Right,
and
they brought me in to do. Yeah, they brought me in to do a workshop. And after I played solo, the kids were had arguments, and this is, they kind of said what you just said. And Michelle was there, and she heard them having arguments about the validity of my approach to the saxophone.
Uh-huh.
but that was the reason that they brought me in, was mm-hmm. to let them see that there are other options and different styles of playing and approaching the instrument and approaching the music that's called jazz.
Right. Well, I hope that expanded their horizons.
I think it did.
Yeah.
My big band played at Trumpets.
Oh, okay.
And several of the Jazz House kids were there, and they about 10 or 12 of them were there, and most of them came up to me afterwards saying how they were excited about what they had heard because they hadn't really checked it out, that particular style of my big band, and they liked it. So I think it's all about opening up.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. There's one thing I have to ask you. Before we end, could you read one of your pieces, Separation?
Oh, sure. No problem. That's one of my oldest pieces, oldest poems from many years ago. It kind of gives my philosophy of music and life. Separation. First is the salad, then the meat, then the vegetables. Wait, bring all my food at one time on the same plate. Dixieland, bebop, soul, rhythm and blues, cool school, swing, avant-garde, jazz, free jazz, rock. What kind of music you play? The good kind. Aretha Franklin and Sunrise, the same folks. Coltrane, Dixie Hummingbirds, the same. Miles, Muddy Waters, the same. There is no. Labels divide, separate. The oral and the literary. One music, different feelings and experience, but same. Total sound, mass sound. Hear all the players as one. The history of Africa was memorized, lived, experienced, nowed. We didn't read it, we did it. Oral, literary, oral, do, experience, improvise, adjust, create. Literary, catalog, label, divide, read, interpret, criticize. No separation. Yeah, don't put me in no bag. I'm open. May do anything. Put all my food on the same plate. African concept of color. If it has light, it's yellow. No subtleties. He must be colorblind. No way. Write Picasso, read the music, play the music, read the music, play the music. Is there a chance of you changing this notation? Can you read music? No. It's best just to create it and play it. That's more direct.
Excellent. Yay! Woo-hoo! Thank you so much, Oliver Lake, for sharing that with us.
All right.
So is there anything that you want to tell the WBAI, Sugar My Bowl listening audience that I've not talked about?
Well, the main thing I think I've mentioned is the fact that we're going to be performing twice in the Winter Jazz Fest.
Yes.
On the 9th with Trio 3 and DJ Iyer at Minetta Lane Theater, and on the 10th at the Bitter End with my organ quartet. And we'll be playing some of the pieces from my new What I Heard CD on Passing Through.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Oliver Lake, for joining us, spending this time with us. And I am so grateful that you were generous in this.
Oh, matter. Thank you. It's been fun.
And, oh, by the way, do you plan to read any of your poetry?
On those performances? No.
Okay.
No. There's nothing scheduled at this time.
Well, thank you so much, Renaissance man, Oliver Lake.
All right. All right, George. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of the program you've been listening to. Oh, my name's Joyce Jones. What we're listening to right now is The Whole World from the Oliver Lake Big Band. Wheels is the name of the release. It's a 2013 Passing Through Records recording. Before that, we heard a little bit from Bjork, the anchor song from her debut release, title debut. Before that, we heard a little bit from A Tribe Called Quest, Stressed Out. Before that, we heard Selene, Oliver Lake, Into Point From Which Creation Begins. That's a 1971 Freedom Records release. Before that, we heard Human Voice, the Oliver Lake Organ Quartet. This is from the What I Heard release, 2014 Passing Through Records. Before that, we heard Shave from Trio 3 and Vijay Iyer from Wiring. This is a 2014 Intact Records release. Before that, we heard Fast Life from the World Saxophone Quartet. This is from the Grand Collaboration, Cathedral of St. John the Divine, New York City. It was recorded on June 26, 1981. And before Fast Life, we heard Max Roach discussing the collaboration between the World Saxophone Quartet and Mboom. Before that, we heard Stock from the World Saxophone Quartet, The New Chapter, the 25th anniversary is the name of the release. And that's a 2001 Just in Time Records release. And coming up next is La Nueva Alternativa. We'll be back on the 28th of December during Kwanzaa on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.